he's a 20th century romantic in that, you know, this is still tonal music. Not to say it's not without a 20th century harmonic language, which it is, but this is an extension of romanticism into the 20th century and with a specifically American stamp on it.
And then you move on to the Saint-Saëns Cello Concerto. We have a soloist with roots in Okemos, Felix Wong. Talk a little bit about the concerto and working with the soloist, if you would.
Well, you know, we love to seek out our local talent that's gone on and done great things, and Felix is certainly in that category. In fact, he won many, many years ago, won the Lansing Symphony's Young Artist Competition, and then he's gone on and really had a terrific career as a chamber musician, soloist, and teacher. And then this is a concerto that the Lansing Symphony hasn't played for many, many years, and it's just really an extraordinarily beautiful piece of music. It's a concise and focused work from the heart of the Romantic concerto repertoire. It's just really a terrific piece.
Was Saint-Saëns a cellist? He seems to have a real affinity for the cello with things like the swan from Carnival of the Animals.
That's a good question. Not to my knowledge. He was a keyboard player. He was an organist, a pianist. He was just a very inspired musician and I think recognized the specific qualities of instruments. And he was one of the, you know, along those lines, one of the first, we always think of the French composers as the great colorists, the composers who really explored combinations of instruments and colors and exploited the specific characteristics of an instrument. And I think that Saint-Saëns was one of those composers who really had an affinity for the inherent qualities of any given instrument.
And then the major, and we do mean major, work on the program is Beethoven's Eroica Symphony, one of the greatest symphonic works of all time, and one that Beethoven wrote with a fair amount of inspiration and disappointment and frustration, depending on, you know, what stage he was in. What's it like to take on something that big?
You know, what I love about it is the avant-garde element. I mean, this was
Beethoven?
This, by all means, this was the Sacre du Printemps of 1803. That audience had never even conceived that music could be anything remotely like this, both in its length and its depth, its harmonic language, its high use of dissonance and, you know, expressive dissonance and power. And it's very easy for today's listener who has already experienced Wagner and Mahler and Bruckner to hear the Eroica in that vein.
But if you backwards looking.
Right. But if you put on your powdered wig and you sit down and hear this as though you were about to hear a Haydn symphony, it's absolutely shocking music. Now, of course, contemporary audiences hear it as there's nothing shocking about it.
Our mind softens it because we've heard other things.
Right. Even the most conservative listener who might find Appalachian Spring to be difficult to digest would hear Eroica and say this is all perfectly accessible music. But to the audience of the day, this is a piece that was just absolutely outrageous.
Do we know how it was received?
Not well.
Really?
Yeah, and it's interesting. They were perplexed by it because nothing approached the length and depth and profundity of the Third Symphony. I'm sure you've read many of those contemporary accounts of all of Beethoven's symphonies, that the Ninth Symphony sounded like, you know, one of my favorites was it sounded like the upsetting of a bag of nails, and or it was
I don't think I've heard that one.
Right. It was another contemporary critic of the Ninth Symphony said that it was a hideous monster that refused to die. And now, of course, we think it's the most glorious music ever.